him. Catch, touchdown.
Stop it. Stop it. You can't do this. You can't escape. You can't make these plays. You can't make these throws.
Jacobs cutting back. Getting to the edge. Jacobs is in for the touchdown.
I just don't remember anybody doing what this young man has done so far in the league.
It's fourth down and one.
For us, I mean, as an offense, as a defense, and as a special team, we didn't execute at a high enough level. We all had chances to win that game, and we understand that now we're kind of at that point where we're in a battle now. And so we're going to go out there every single day and make sure that we can execute at a higher level because we haven't been this whole season and playing the way that we know how to play. And so, I mean, we talk about that as a team, but I think that's just the mindset that Coach Reed's kind of instilled in us and the mindset that we're going to have moving forward.
Welcome to Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Shenanigans Jacobs. And we always bring a strong mentality to the podcast, Nick.
Except when I have a cold and I'm half asleep because of the antibodies.
So last week was a fluke. But that's, you know.
Just like that Titans loss.
You weren't day to day, but it was up in the air from, like, say, Wednesday to Thursday and Thursday to Friday about your availability.
I mean, if you want to use technical injury report terms, yeah, no, I was making sure that my fever was gone first before I...
you were definitely questionable for the podcast last week. This week, though, full participant.
Blooming like a flower, Todd. Blooming like a flower. So I'm...
It's good to have you back, big guy.
I'm back in a podcast groove.
All right. I feel like...
I feel like I'm going to do a karaoke night soon once my cough is formally gone.
And if we don't tell the people on the podcast when and where... I feel like that will be a missed opportunity for them to experience the awesomeness of Nick Jacobs doing a podcast.
I just got to figure out karaoke. I just got to figure out where the other karaoke bars are at that would be more of a centralized location, because the one I go to, I'm pretty sure somebody got shot or stabbed a year ago and I haven't gone back since.
Which one?
I'm not gonna give the name of the
There's
place.
There's the Red Balloon out in Overland Parkish, 75th Streetish.
Yeah, I drive to Overland Park a lot from my neck of the woods.
All right, man. I don't know. I mean, maybe you go down to Wahlburgers to get, you know, to try it out.
I wouldn't even go visit you in Olathe. You think I'm gonna go to Overland Park?
Well, Overland Park's closer. You understand that, right?
Yeah, I get that, but it's still far. From my neck of the woods.
Oh, so you're saying you would drive farther to see me than you would for karaoke?
I don't want you to.
That might be the sweetest thing you've ever said to me, Nick.
I think you're taking this out of context now.
No, it's a Thanksgiving miracle.
I'm not even gonna. So I heard we got a Chiefs podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of missed opportunities for hugs and stuff, the Chiefs missed an opportunity in Tennessee to not lose in a horrifically bad fashion.
Yeah, that was a kind of a bad deal. And looking at the coach's film didn't encourage me anymore.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, what did you learn from the coach's film? I mean, it's easy to look at the botched field goals. It's easy to look at the second half run defense. But what kind of things really stood out to you that maybe set the table for the terrible run defense in the second half and those field goals to ultimately prove decisive?
Well, the impressions I took away from the game itself, from watching the coach's film, one, I talked about it on the podcast Sunday, but it illustrated it even more. Patrick Mahomes, how aware he was on there of what coverages they were in, what blitzes they were bringing, anticipating them and adjusting the protection accordingly, and knowing where to go with the ball and where to beat the coverages. That was really, really impressive how he did that.
Yeah, he's good.
Now, people are criticizing the 3rd-and-2 play where they had the tight end screen, and people thought he should have adjusted to Robinson down at the bottom. But my thing is, I don't know what they have set up overall collectively in terms of their play calls in the huddle, what they want them to adjust accordingly, what the offense is capable of adjusting to accordingly. Like, I don't have those answers.
Well, and the other thing is, if you're running a screenplay, and I don't know if people understand this rule, offensive linemen can be downfield on a screenplay, but only if you complete a pass to a player who's behind the line of scrimmage. So. Right. When you call a screenplay, if you don't have multiple options behind the line of scrimmage, you're probably going to get that play called back for a legal man downfield. If you were to pass it to a player that was 5 yards downfield, then you know, even if the offensive linemen aren't blocking for that player, even if it's on the backside of the play, you've still got a rules violation for the ineligible downfield, and so that play is probably getting called back. So the problem may just be that, you know. now. It may just be a time where Andy outfought himself. He just assumed that that play was going to work, and he didn't give himself as many options as he needed to. Because it looked like Patrick wanted to try to make something happen and then realized he didn't have any other options, so he just slid down and bounced trying to keep the clock running.
Well, and what I think happened there on that specific play, other than the fact that the tight end screen was pretty much dead in the water after the time they snapped it, because the defender stayed with her because they'd already run it 2 to 3 different times in the game already.
Yeah.
So the Titans were looking for that. Now, where I think the difference was that a lot of people haven't really spoken about or talked about is Patrick had room to potentially run. If he's 100% healthy, knees completely fine, he had room to run and convert that first down. But I think he knew, you know, I think he was being smart overall.
He would have taken a hit,
yeah,
for sure.
That would have potentially happened. But then also, I think he was smart this past week in protecting that knee and protecting his overall body by not trying to force the competitive, you know, understanding what's more important versus just the competitive nature that he has to try to win.
See, my frustration with the play was with the play call, but it was, I would have preferred an RPO there just because you had run the ball successfully there. And if you go up the line and you get the right look, just take your chances battering it forward, because probably worst case scenario is you end up with an inches to go situation, you know, and then you can quarterback sneak or something, right?
Please don't use that word with me again. All right, so that's the first part. Now, second part I'll tackle into is the run defense. Now, the first problem was overall, from looking at some of their run defenses, obviously they had Chris Jones and Frank Clark at times as defensive ends, and Tano Passanioan as well. They used less Colin Saunders than I expected a defensive tackle. Derek Nnadi and Joey Ivey were kind of the defensive tackles they used.
Yeah, and they also, if you go beyond that to the next level, they used a lot more Daniel Sorensen than Reggie Ragland.
Well, not just that. They were using Ben Neiman and Daniel Sorensen as more of the coverage backers, because I think the Chiefs were thinking there was going to be more play action pass and trying to isolate the running backs versus the linebackers,
yeah,
than what there actually ended up being.
And if you had been able to build off of that first quarter lead and you were up by a couple touchdowns in the second half, maybe that's the way it would have played out.
And I think that's kind of the strategy they were going with, but it didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
So in that regard, what's up?
Well, real quick, whose fault is that, though? Because if the game doesn't go the way you had it scripted in your head, is it on Spagnuolo to adjust and go to Ragland more? I mean, at some point early in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter, don't you think the Chiefs should have tried to make an adjustment and maybe brought in Saunders more, brought in Ragland more, and gone to trying to shore that up, as opposed to just continuing with a scheme that was not working? Because that was one of the criticisms we always had, Chiefs Kingdom always had about Bob Sutton, was his inability and or unwillingness to adjust in the game. And I think we've seen times where Spags has been willing and able to adjust, but in this game it didn't seem like it worked. So who do you have a sense for who, you know, what could have solved the problem on Sunday?
The only thing that I think they could have solved, and I think they're going to have to do in the future, is it looked like the linebackers were shuffling down from sideline to sideline versus attacking a gap to where this is your gap. You go attack that gap specifically. That lineman's got that gap. That lineman's got that gap. You got this gap. Do your run fits that way and just roll with it. I saw linebackers that were reading and reacting more than rather attacking. So to me, I'm kind of wondering if they were hesitant because they were expecting more play action pass, and they thought that they were going to have to drop into more zones and everything. So when that run's coming instead, they're back on their heels and they're a couple yards back and they're not, this linebacking group can't really fight through blocks well. They can attack gaps well, but they're not good at fighting through blocks and taking on double teams and things of that nature. So that's the way you help your interior in this linebacking group overall, is you attack the gap. So I think going forward, you're going to lose some when you do that. You're going to get isolated against a running back sometimes. You're going to get some matchups that aren't favorable. But the ability to stop the run and the ability to attack the quarterback, I feel like, that's what's going to make or break this defense. You're just going to have to take some of the L's along the way and some of the weaknesses that people can exploit. I think you're going to have to find – I don't think you can find a balance with that, with the personnel that you have personally.
Well, and a lot of that just comes down to trust, right? Like, if you're going to play an attacking style, then you just have to know, okay, my assignment on this play is the B gap, the A gap, wherever it may be, taking on this block, taking on this double team. And you just have to understand, you're one piece of the puzzle. You do your piece. You trust the guy next to you to do your piece. And then ultimately you hope that you know, if everybody does their piece, ultimately then you've outnumbered the blockers and somebody's got to then make a tackle. It comes down to a one-on-one situation where maybe a safety coming up or maybe a linebacker in the gap. They have to make the play. If they don't, then you give up something there. But the bottom line is they played that attacking style more against Denver, against Green Bay, against Minnesota, and the results defensively were encouraging.
Right.
And then this last week at Tennessee, they kind of went away from it.
Right.
And what we saw was them revert back to that frustrating September, early October defense. So, it may just be one thing we praise about like Tennessee and some other teams we've seen, very multiple. They can do a lot of different things. They can, you know, bring pressure in different ways. They can rush forward and still get to the quarterback. They can, you know, they bring some blitzes. They do a lot of twist stunts. It may just be that Kansas City can't do that. That they're good at one thing, and they need to focus on that one thing.
And I think attacking the gaps and blitzing, I think that's kind of their wheelhouse, and that's where I think they need to stay. Final part of this journey is field goal. So what happened on the first one, from what I saw on the coaches?
And that's the one that was Winchester prematurely snapped into Colquitt's leg when he wasn't watching.
Correct. So what I noticed from watching the coaches' film on that is that Colquitt has a process, and what the process is, he will put his right hand up towards the long snapper to essentially be ready. And Colquitt will take his head and he will turn it back, and he will double check with either make sure the official's good if he has to, and look at Harrison until Harrison puts his head down for his field goal. And then once Harrison's put his head down for his field goal, Colquitt will then turn his head towards Winchester, and that's when Winchester knows to snap the ball. So that's their process. A lot of field goal kickers do that, variation of snapping timing. I haven't studied everybody, and I'm not going to.
Pretty common, though.
So what happened on that one, Colquitt was looking at 46 because they kept moving him around every single field goal and extra point. And whenever I made the comment to you on Sunday, I noticed that even more so, that they were testing him out on both sides to see where he could potentially make
it happen. The weakness was, yeah.
So he kept doing that, and he kept trying to time it accordingly to it. And he finally got the timing down there on the last one. But Colquitt was keeping an eye on him because he'd almost blocked two other field goals and an extra point. So Colquitt's there looking at him. Then he turns back, looks towards the ref. The ref's backing up to, you know,
wind the clock.
And Colquitt had already put his right hand up. So he'd already done half of the of what they were going to. And unfortunately, he put his head back towards the line of scrimmage versus looking back up at Butker. Winchester saw that, and then Winchester snapped it.
Yeah.
So that's what happened on that one. Now, the next one, the final one there, what ended up happening on that was the same process. Colquitt did the process this time. But what ended up happening is as soon as Colquitt turned his head forwards, that's when 46 went. As soon as he saw that head turn, he went. So if they had a different timing on that snap, he would have been offsides. They would have got 5 yards, and then you know, they could have adjusted accordingly to what they needed to. But it had taken a lot of field goal attempts for him to reach that point to know, as soon as I see the head, I'm going at this time. Because I counted it up, it wasn't even half a second.
So really, in a way, the blocked field goal in the last one is Patrick Mahomes' fault. Because if he had led more touchdown drives instead of settling for field goals early in the game, they wouldn't have had the opportunity to time that up. That's what I heard you say.
Well, you're a terrible listener, then.
Well, no, but it's true. I mean, the fact that they did settle for field goals and gave them so many opportunities to test out, test out things there, ultimately led to the last play. And you and I both agree, he was not offsides, right? Like, I mean,
no.
Let's put that to bed. On the final field goal try, when it got blocked, it was a good football play. It was not a penalty that was missed by the referees.
Correct.
All right, let's hear from Clark Hunt. Because if you remember, Clark Hunt met with the media, kind of a midseason check-in. He talked about how anything less than a Super Bowl would be a disappointment this year. Let's hear
early on.
Yeah, in training camp. Let's hear if his stance has evolved after four losses in the last six games for the Chiefs.
Well, I believe we've got an outstanding football team with a great coaching staff. And I think as they continue to work better as we head towards hopefully a playoff opportunity, I think the team's going to continue to improve. I mentioned at the beginning of the season that one of the most important narratives this year was the improvement of the defense and how that took place during the season. I personally didn't expect that we would start off with a finished product, and I've been very encouraged by what I've seen this past week, and notwithstanding, I do think the defense is improving. With Patrick back and now getting more of our offensive starters back, I think the offense can be at least as good as it was last year, if not better.
So that was Chief CEO Clark Hunt. His family, I don't know if you're aware, his family owns the Chiefs franchise and always has.
You don't say.
Yeah. Yeah. He is the big cheese in the organization, so to speak. Look, I mean, I don't think he's wrong. You know, I think the defense has gotten better. I agree the Tennessee game maybe wasn't the finest example of that. But I think on balance from week one, you know, from training camp to you know, through the first 10 weeks, I think you've seen improvement here and there. There's still a long way to go, I think, before you'd call that a finished product or even a league average defense. But the goal was always the goal for this defense was always to improve. It was never to be dominant for this season, right? I mean, nobody thought this defense was going to be dominant, did they?
No, I think there was always going to be a 2-year project to get everything that they needed personnel wise to be able to achieve success. So I didn't expect them to be elite. I think people were hoping that they would, how do I put this? I think people were hoping that they could be middle of the road, and in some aspects they are. I think they have a certain identity they have to play this year with the personnel that they have. And I think they kind of strayed away from it in the Titans game.
Yeah. And we'll see ultimately whether that is good enough to get him to the promised land, so to speak, or not. But I don't think it's time to give up on this team. I don't think it's time to give up on Andy Reid's tenure. I do want to say this. I know there's some people out there who, you know, have said, oh, you know, Andy's never going to get it done, that kind of thing. Just take a moment and think about the Herm Edwards era. Think about the way the Schottenheim era ended. Think about the one playoff game you had for all the experience of the Vermeil era. Don't forget the Todd Haley years, the Romeo Crennel experiment. And just ask yourself if you really want to go back to that, because this is the most successful version the Chiefs have had since those early since those 1990s Marty's teams. It took 20 years for the Chiefs franchise to get back to that. Mm-hmm. And Andy Reid is responsible for that. Andy Reid, the combination of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes is what he is. Yes, he's got some great natural gifts, but make no mistake that Patrick Mahomes is what Patrick Mahomes is today because of Andy Reid. I have no doubt in my mind about that. And just ask yourself whether the 2012 version of you wanted Ned Yost to be gone, and whether, in hindsight, you're glad that the Royals stayed the course, because 2014 and 2015 maybe don't happen without Ned Yost. And just keep that in mind. I know you may be frustrated about his game management, you know, different things like that, but I still think Andy Reid is the best player or the best coach for Patrick Mahomes and the best coach to lead this franchise in the quest for a Super Bowl. Maybe you disagree, but I think people are calling for Andy Reid's head or being short-sighted.
Why would I disagree with winning?
Well, yeah,
well, because I mean, Andy Reid is one playoff. I mean, think about this: Andy Reid is one playoff game, winning one more playoff game away from probably the most success this franchise has had since Stram, in terms of playoff wins. Because Vermeil never won, Marty won the. In that 1 year, Marty won the Steelers, Oilers, and then lost the Bills. The Chiefs have won the Texans in 15, and then they won the Colts game last year, and they made it to the NFC Championship. So he's at the culmin of where Marty was success-wise in terms of postseason success.
I'm just telling you, if D Ford isn't offsides and that Charvarius Ward pick stands, the Chiefs play in the Super Bowl, and I think in a rematch with the Rams, the Chiefs would have won that football game. I think that the Chiefs would have won that rematch. So to pretend like Andy Reid can't get it done, I think is – I literally think that he was one bad decision away from potentially winning one already with the Chiefs franchise. And I would roll the dice with him and Patrick Mahomes moving forward over him and anyone else.
I can't dispute anything.
All right, well, that's a good place to end on then, because you know, it's rare that Nick agrees with me. So we're going to take a break, and I'm going to bask.
Todd's going to take a victory lap.
I'm going to bask in the glow of my victory.
When you're the home of the Chiefs, you give the kingdom what they want. Shows that go inside the locker room and get up close and personal. Any closer, and you'd need a helmet and a chin strap. Exclusive insight from the man who bleeds Chiefs red. A weekly podcast that's second to none. And starting next year, the preseason games play here. 41 Action News, Kansas City's home of the Chiefs.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick, I don't know if you're aware. Supposedly, Mexico City and Stadium Azteca, where the Chiefs and Chargers will play on Monday night, I think it's going to be the highest altitude game the Chiefs ever played at. It's well over a mile above its sea level. It's almost a mile and a half above sea level. It's like Denver on steroids. How much of an impact do you think that will have on the game?
Where I think it's going to have an impact that I don't think a lot of people are thinking of right now, I think it's going to have an impact on field goals, maybe how far they can kick it in that air. I think it's going to have a little bit of impact on Colquitt's punts and the other punter.
And he's already the best in NFL history.
And then I know Patrick Mahomes had made comment during the offseason he was confident he could throw 100 yards.
I just want to see
that stadium. And I know somebody asked him at the press conference, and he's like, well, if we get it to 1 yard line, I'll test them, you know. I don't know if I'll test it out or not.
He's absolutely overthrowing Tyreek Hill.
Yeah,
this
Tyreek
week.
Literally overthrown by 10 yards instead of 4 or 5. So I think that's in a passing game perspective, I think that's going to be a little interesting for both sides of the coin for Rivers, because I mean, there may be some where Rivers thinks he's got a fastball it just like he normally would in normal air, and then it's like, oh, that went over his head by a couple of yards. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Hopefully it's a big game for Juan Thornhill lurking back there.
Chiefs secondary has their most interceptions because of the altitude.
Speaking of the altitude, though, a little bit of controversy in Chargers camp. They decided to go to Colorado for a few days to practice. This seems a little bit like the University of Missouri's decision to drink beet juice before the Wyoming game. Like, in theory, it sounds good. Like, you know, I mean, maybe sometimes somebody will, like, you know, rent a space shuttle and they'll you know, practice in space or something. But the reality is, I don't think 2 days, 3 days in Colorado is going to make that much of a difference in terms of acclimating the Chargers to what they're going to encounter in Mexico City.
I think the Chargers are in a unique area right now that part of their problem is they fired their offensive coordinator, Ken Wisenhunt, a couple weeks ago. And I truly believe that's a big reason why the offense struggled, especially in that two-minute drill on the Thursday night football game against the Raiders. So the Chargers are going to be a little bit more rested. But if they're going to be more rested, they should have done that altitude thing a lot sooner than what they did. So I know from some of the studies I've looked at and everything, like it takes multiple weeks. It's not something that, you know, it's going to give you an edge just doing it for a couple days. And the Chargers players are not happy about that. Some of those players seem beyond frustrated about the fact that they're in Colorado Springs having to do that right now.
Well, Andy Reid apparently can, you know, he has his thoughts on high altitude training as well. So let's hear from Andy Reid and some guy named Patrick Mahomes.
I'm not sure you can, you know, how much preparation that you can get, you know, in a very short period of time. So I don't think that carries over to this physiologically. I don't think it does. So I'm saying playing in Denver. You know, again, I'm not saying what other people are doing. I mean, other people do what they do. I'm just saying that for us.
I mean, I'm obviously very excited to play in Mexico. I mean, the stadium, the history, the people, the fan base that is down there. I mean, it's going to be an amazing atmosphere. And to me, the altitude thing is something that, I mean, it's just kind of part of it. I mean, I feel like I'm going to trust in what the Rick and Coach Reed and their plan and the process. But, I mean, I've never been affected, knock on wood, never been affected, like in Denver or anything like that. I know it's supposed to be twice as high or whatever, but I'm going to go out there and just play the game and focus on what I can in order to have success.
So that was Andy Reid kind of tiptoeing around, suggesting that Anthony Lynn's decision.
He's trying to avoid people trying to say that that's what he's saying.
He was trying to avoid bulletin board material, but it's clear that he's skeptical that the Chargers' decision is going to pay off on Monday night.
I don't think he's not trying to talk about the Chargers. He's just saying for his football team and the people he makes decisions for that he didn't feel that it was going to give them a competitive advantage.
The Chargers clearly did, though.
Well, and that's the Chargers' fault. And he's deliberately trying to keep people from... He's trying to keep people like you from trying to make
headline. It's like you when we have conversations, you know, that involve HR. You tiptoe around it. I just cut through it for the people.
That's the worst analogy you've used yet, but whatever, man.
Be like, all right.
You do you, Todd.
All right. You know what? Thank you very much. I will. By the way, I think you're going to get. I don't think altitude beat juice. Short of blood doping. Short of blood doping, like you're a Tour de France cyclist trying to make it. You know, make it to the end of a 3,000-mile journey where you're like artificially adding oxygen to your blood. I'm not sure there's anything that either one of the teams can do before Monday to get themselves ready.
I want to see if Mahomes can throw it out of a stadium.
Yeah, just throw it out of a stadium. I will say this. I think you're going to get two desperate teams on Monday Night Football because the Chiefs need to get the taste out of their mouth from the loss to Tennessee and really from the last 6 weeks where they have gone 2-4, you know, and I mean, people forget they had the 3-game losing streak at home. You know, they were struggling, you know, and if you want to have any chance at a bye, you've probably got to win out at this point because of, you know, where the Texans sit, where the Ravens sit, and where the Patriots sit above you in the standings. So, you know, I mean, you can't afford to give away any more games. And the reality is, with the schedule that Oakland faces, they are going to be 7-4 in all likelihood when the Chiefs meet them on December 1st. And the Chiefs, obviously, after this week, have a bye. If you want to take control of this division, you've got to beat the Chargers and also be 7-4 going into that matchup with Oakland, because that's going to decide the AFC West. You know, but from the Chargers' point of view, if they don't win this game, they might their AFC West chances are done, almost certainly. But also their playoff chances are very likely done as well with 7 losses. You know, so I think you're going to have 2 desperate teams on Monday night. What do you expect to see from these teams? You know, and what's going to tip the balance of the scales in favor of the Chargers or the Chiefs in this one?
Well, looking at the Chargers' perspective of it, Rivers still thinks he can make a lot of the throws that he has in past years, but he's starting to become more inaccurate, especially with the hits he's taken this year and the pressure that he's been receiving with the fact that his offensive line isn't as effective as it has been in previous years. So you can get
better or worse in the Chiefs offensive line.
Worse. So you can get,
and you're a big fan of the Chiefs offensive line.
so you can get pressure on him and you can rattle him and you can make him throw a little wide and be inaccurate and throw some interceptions. So, I mean, there's opportunity there, even more so than a normal Phillip Rivers year. Like, I mean, he's wobbling a little bit right now. I mean, the time off probably helped him, but I'm telling you, there's some opportunities there to have multiple interceptions. I do think they're going to try to take a lot of what the Titans and some of the other teams have done run-wise, and I think they're going to try to run at the Chiefs. That's why I think the Chiefs really need to go back to who they were and be aggressive in the gaps and take that away from them and force Rivers to be the one who has to throw it and continue to bring the pressure. Now, from a receiver perspective,
I was going to say, is there anyone, because Tyrell Williams is gone, they don't have an Antonio Gates type guy. Hunter Henry's pretty good, but is there anyone who really scares you in that receiving group?
Mike Williams is still talented, and so is Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen's a good route runner, so those guys are both more than capable. Travis Benjamin, they're probably going to move on from after this year because he has a lot of case of drop passes, and speed starting to slow down a little bit overall. But, I mean, they have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen both make me nervous, but I think if you pressure Rivers, I think that's going to be the key to attacking their offense.
Is Keenan Allen for lack of a better term, a poor man's Julian Edelman? Is he that good as a route runner and that much of a potential difference maker? Because we've seen what Julian Edelman has done to the Chiefs historically.
I think if you get him in the right matchup, he's able to do that. I'll be curious to see what matchups they do. Now, defensively with the Chargers, they got two really good edge rushers with Bosa and Ingram. Yeah. They pressure up the middle still isn't, I think, where they need it to be or where they want it to be. Linebacker-wise, I mean, they're fine. They flow well. They got good speed. But you can run on that team. You can run right at them if you want to. You can kind of stretch them out as long as you get the edge rushers taken care of. And, I mean, Gus Bradley runs that cover three style like the Jaguars do and the 49ers did and, you know, the Seahawks do. So, I mean, the Chiefs have plays that they can manipulate against that coverage. And I think – and not having Derwin James is a big factor.
Big loss for their secondary.
He's starting to practice again, but if he's not able to play, which I don't think he will be, but if he's not able to, then I think that's another aspect that – I think the Chiefs can take advantage of. So there's a lot of opportunities for the Chiefs team to succeed. It's just a matter of when the Chiefs are on offense, Bosa and Ingram are the key to really attacking what they want to.
Well, let's hear from Andy Reid on that Chargers defense.
Yeah, they have two great rush ends that do the best in the business. They're very well coached. And they've got experienced linebackers, and their secondary flies around. And they've got, obviously, a Pro Bowl corner, and the other one's from BYU. So, you know, they're all good.
That was Andy Reid with the BYU joke. He offensive lineman at BYU back in the day. Also probably why Daniel Sorensen will be on this team until he retires.
Yeah, we'll see.
Sorensen also from BYU, just in case you didn't know. So, obviously, Melvin Gordon, is he the same... What have you seen from Gordon? I mean, because he held out. That was a big part of it. Can he replicate what Derrick Henry has done? Or he's a little bit – he's a tall, upright runner in some ways like Derrick Henry, but he's not as powerful and as bruising as Derrick Henry, is he?
No, he's got the same power and bruising back. And part of their problem is with the tackles on the edge, they haven't been able to, in my opinion, solidify the edge to be able to effectively run like they're capable of. Where I think Gordon can create a problem for him, though, is if they isolate him against the linebacker
in the coverage. Passing game.
I think the Chargers are going to do that some, too, with their running backs. But with Eckler and some of those other guys, they're capable of doing that.
I was going to say, I think they might do that more with Eckler, and then you could have an Aaron Jones situation. I would welcome it if they did a little bit more with Gordon, because I don't think Gordon's got quite the breakaway speed that Aaron Jones did when the Packers really took advantage of that. So
I didn't think Derrick Henry had breakaway speed either.
No, well...
Yeah, ran some Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah. But that was just on a hand up off the middle when Chris Jones decided not to. Anyway, we don't need to traumatize the people anymore. Let's take a quick break and then we'll be back here on 4th and 1.
When you're the home of the Chiefs, you give the kingdom what they want. Shows that go inside the locker room and get up close and personal. Any closer, and you need a helmet and a chin strap. Exclusive insight from the man who bleeds Chiefs red. A weekly podcast that's second to none. And starting next year, the preseason games play here. 41 Action News, Kansas City's home of the Chiefs.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick?
Yeah, Todd.
It's that time again.
Check tweets.
There you go.
See, you can tell I'm healthy.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Sort of healthy.
So he's back, folks. We briefly considered putting him on IR, but thought better.
Were you going to give me a designation to work?
yeah, designation to return to work. Go cut more water main break VOs, Nick.
I'll try. Try my best.
All right. Our first question comes from Ariel Rothfield. Just kidding. We're not Ariel. We don't care about the Dolphins winning their two games. Okay. We're moving on. our first question comes from Alexander Nguyen. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Nguyen?
Just Alexander.
There we go. All right. Alex asks, why can't the Chiefs play disciplined football? Is it because of the way Andy Reid coaches and what he tolerates? And if so, is that going to change anytime soon?
I think from the discipline perspective, it's a matter of focus. I think the Chiefs just got to have a certain level of focus on the field for the players. So Andy can say what he needs to, coaching staff can say what they need to, But at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the players, in my opinion, how bad do they want to win a championship. And because I think the coaching staff does a good job teaching them their technique and preparing them week to week. It's just a matter of, do these guys want to get it done, or do they need to be replaced in the offseason?
This is not a Chiefs problem either. Like, go back and listen to Taylor Lewin the left tackle for the Titans, and how he just eviscerated himself for the penalties and how he was killing them and stuff like that. I mean, I don't think anybody looks at the Titans team and says they're undisciplined and that's the problem, and Vrabel can't do this, can't do that. I mean, guys commit penalties. It's part of the game. And sometimes, it's a frustrating part of the game for fans. I get that.
All right. Question for you is going to be from, thanks for answering my question. Try to break this up, and Todd.
My bad. Let's
Todd,
go. Be like, oh, you waste so much time during the podcast.
You want to talk about somebody who's got time management issues? It's Todd Palmer.
Fair point. I'm guilty.
Chancey asks, can Todd Palmer explain what exactly Colquitt was doing?
On what? I mean, being awesome, probably. So I think, like you said, I mean, you know, watching the coach's film, I'm assuming he's talking about the play where Colquitt ultimately got the intentional grounding. I think that they had a breakdown in the process, and resulted in Winchester snapping it when Colquitt wasn't expecting it. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate it happened in a game where it mattered, as opposed to, say, a game where the Chiefs were already up 14 and it wouldn't have made much as difference. But there were lots of those kind of moments last week. And I think that's why Patrick Mahomes talked a lot about mentality this week.
So Todd, next question, please.
All right. This is from Clint McKenzie. Clint wants to know, Nick, will the Chiefs never learn, or will Chiefs fans never learn? And then he said, I'm just kidding. How many sacks will the Chiefs have against the Chargers on Monday? Over, under 5.5.
I don't know. I hope they have at least 4. I think they're capable of having 4. If they attack the way I think they're capable of, they could at least have 4.
Well, I think if they can get a lead and you can attack the edges on that group. I mean, look, Phillip Rivers has a lot of Joe Flacco to him in terms of he's a little bit more athletic than Joe Flacco, but I think he's not going to be moving around in the pocket a whole lot. There's a fairly stationary target for guys to go after.
I wish I had a watch so I could point to your time management skills right now.
As you waste time, let's go.
Our last question, it's going to be brief here, hopefully, is Keith asked, how do I regain the hopes I had for a Super Bowl last December and January?
Eat a bowl of ice cream and listen to Nick Jacob, who's a fountain of optimism. Because they're going to win a Super Bowl, right?
I'm hoping so. I'm hoping they get that
See?
Done.
There you go. Nick, a ray of sunshine in your life. I hope that made you feel better.
I thought you were going to say just eating Mahomes cereal.
Make you
stronger.
Yeah.
So that's all for this.
Mahomes
question.
Magic Crunch for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What could possibly go wrong with that diet?
So that's all for this edition of Check the Tweets.
And that's all for this edition of 4th and 1. We apologize in advance for all of Nick's time wasting, and we'll try to get better next week.
I look forward to the challenge.
Well, that time's yours.